Greetings once again, everyone. It is Thursday, and of course, that means it is time for another Access to Access webinar. And I thought, what better time than the present to bring back my friend Andy Hoffman, known to almost everybody that follows gold and silver. Andy is a tremendous gold analyst, actually got his start on Wall Street as an analyst there, but he left there in 2002. Since then, his focus on nothing but really gold and silver. He has worked at Miles Franklin, the great online metals dealer, since 2011, and his work is indispensable as we fight the cartel on a daily basis. So Andy, thank you so much for spending some time here in Turnville once again.
Well, thanks for having me. And actually, while my focus has been entirely on precious metals since 2002, I actually didn't leave Wall Street, where I was an oil field service analyst, until 2005. It's just that in the last 3 years that I was there, I could care less about anything except gold and silver, and I've obviously taken that to the next level with my multiple careers afterwards, first in the mining industry for 5 years and now for almost 5 years in the precious metal bullion industry. And I'll say, we were talking about before this call started how, you know, you have become a force in our community to be both respected, admired, and to be reckoned with. I think you've become one of the finest interviewers and interviewees on the circuit, and good for you and for all the people that subscribe to you.
Thank you very much, Andy. I appreciate that. And I do mean it. I think what you do, though, not to, like, we're going to make this some kind of mutual admiration club, but the stuff you write on a daily basis and the way you've documented the ongoing price manipulation is just invaluable. And you're an asset to the entire gold community. And I really appreciate all the time you stop by here. And it's great to do it again. For everybody listening, we do these Access to Access presentations on this GoToWebinar control panel so that you can ask questions. That's why it's called Access to Access. You get access to my access, basically. So on your GoToWebinar control panel, you will find a questions tab. After I get done asking Andy some questions and after we go through the questions that have been emailed in, you get to ask questions yourself by typing in questions on that questions tab, and I will relay them to Andy. This is your chance to ask him anything you'd like. So, Andy, if you are ready, my friend, let's dive right in. You wrote something, I guess this was yesterday, about Deutsche Bank and the size of their derivative book. And, you know, it's almost like a short covering scam that's been going on for the last week as the main story, the main fuel for the rally in their common shares and their ADR has been this idea that they're going to even further reduce their liquidity by buying back some of their debt. Andy, we followed this here at TFMR now for a couple of months. And the way those European banks are all linked together, you know, through their debt, but now also through this daisy chain of derivatives, boy, it's a dangerous situation. Like I said, you wrote a great article yesterday. I'll link it here on this podcast page. But I'm curious to get your thoughts. How perilous is that situation at Deutsche Bank?
Well, actually, it's funny. Yesterday's article, The Death Throes of Deutsche Bank, was a follow-up to one I did maybe a week or two ago that was called Deutsche Bank on the Verge of Taking Down the Whole Monetary System, whatever. But strangely enough, for all the reading I do on the alternative media and spending 24/7 looking at Zero Hedge, it was on your interview with Jason Burak where you first alerted me to start watching Deutsche Bank, because it was not really widely reported anywhere that it was having a Bear Stearns slash Lehman-like drop in its stock. And it was after that that I looked at it, and sure enough, a day or two later, it was flooding the news. You know, my thoughts on Deutsche Bank is, look, first of all, it has to start somewhere, right? Whether it's going to be all these Italian banks, which have had a week of being limit down every day, and, you know, they have 50% non-performing loans, or whether it's all the bailouts of the pigs in Greece and other places, or whether it's a secret bank somewhere that has huge exposure to energy loans that we don't even know about, or derivatives. But the fact is, it's got to start somewhere, and the fact that it happens to be Deutsche Bank, which is not only the largest bank in Europe, but the, you know, it's either them or JP Morgan are the largest purveyor of derivatives on the planet, does not surprise me. And when I'm looking at it, again, I don't know exactly what's going on. No one will ever know until the liquidity runs out and they go bankrupt, exactly what the problem is. But we've all been around this, who've been in the market for a while. Certainly people around in 2002 for companies like Enron and WorldCom, who were both Solomon clients when I was there, so I certainly was well aware what was going on. And, of course, what went on in 2008 when we saw companies like from Fannie Mae to to Countrywide Credit, to Lehman. This is exactly what happened to their stock and CDS, default swaps. I mean, it's the exact same thing. And I even wrote in that first Deutsche Bank thing, I said that all that between now and the collapse is going to be these psychotic counter-trend surges in the stock based on ridiculous rumors, kind of like these oil rumors about production cuts that won't happen. And sure enough, you know, we get the psychotic surge based on, as you say, they're going to buy back debt, and you're going, really? So they have a liquidity problem that the entire credit market and credit default swap market is all over, knowing that these guys have money, and we're supposed to believe that they suddenly that they have $5 extra billion to spend to retire. So as far as I'm concerned, they now have $5 billion less. And, you know, the only way they had any, if their balance sheet doesn't show anymore, it's because someone secretly lent it to them.
Exactly. And again, these banks are all linked together. I would you characterize it this way, Andy? Metaphor? I always get my metaphor in it. I wasn't an English major, so it's a metaphor, it's an analogy, it's something like that. But I see Deutsche Bank almost as AIG was back in the credit default swap days. You know, they were the bag holder. AIG was writing credit default swaps to anybody that wanted them because they thought everything was just fine, and then they became the ultimate cesspool. That went from a triple-digit stock, AAA-rated company down to nothing. And now Deutsche Bank seems to be the same bag holder for commodity derivatives. Do you think that is the case?
Well, you know what? It's one of two things. It could simply just been a greedy management that they were happy. They were like, this is great. Everyone's kind of made us the de facto premium seller, and we're going to make all this money selling premiums, as if they didn't remember what happened 7 years previously. But of course, you know, they also thought that they were too big to fail. That's the other part. And in Deutsche Bank's case, when I say the other thing that's happening is, you know, as the CEO, the former CEO of Morgan Stanley said the other day, there's a reason that they're called Deutsche Bank. They're, you know, they're the equivalent of the Bank of Germany. So it's very possible that they were doing this with government collaboration to support the Ponzi scheme. And, you know, like all Ponzi schemes, it has to collapse sometimes. So, yeah, they probably will be a or the bag holder. But as you said, I mean, it's a daisy chain. And again, this is, you know, I was saying the other day, it's like Dorothy said, we're not in Kansas anymore. This is not 2008. There's no backstop here. The Fed and the ECB, they can't come in and save Deutsche Bank, let alone everyone else. If they go, everything goes. There's just no gray area here.
Well, I tell you what, that leads us to, I guess, the second question that I had, because they are connected. The other thing that is killing these banks, especially the ones in Europe, is negative interest rates. I mean, how do you make money as a bank? How do you, you know, when you're supposed to borrow short and lend long, but by lending long, you have negative interest rates. I mean, it just doesn't fly. And so they're getting squeezed on that end too. But man, negative interest rates are here to stay. And what I wanted to ask you about, Andy, because you're just so clear-headed and you speak so eloquently in describing this stuff. NERP, negative interest rates, are here to stay. And they're being institutionalized. And one of the ways they're being institutionalized is this move to eliminate cash, eliminate actual physical C-notes, cash, anything, you know, that type of thing. That delevers the system if you take cash out of the bank, but it also, boy, it's a tremendous infringement upon personal freedom and liberty. So this is coming though.
Right.
The trial balloons are there. I mean, on a more frequent basis, daily basis, really. Now you're reading this in the media as if people are being conditioned to accept the idea. Yeah, you know what? Cash is only for criminals. We got to get rid of it. So long question for you, Andy. But how would you, in your own words, sum up, describe this? Let's call it a war on cash. This move to eliminate cash.
Okay. Well, let me give you an answer on several fronts. First of all, I'm not typically someone who predicts timing or anything. I spent basically, after I saw everything going on in the first few weeks of the year, I spent pretty much all of January and the last few weeks screaming, this is the end game. There is no turning around. There is nothing other than we are in the next 2008 right now. Counter trend rallies, 1,000 points, short squeeze, it doesn't matter. The game is going to end this year. And that was before all of this cashless society NERP stuff came flying onto the scene, first with the tiny little Japanese minus 0.1%, and now all of a sudden they're getting rid of the 500-euro note and they're going to get rid of the $100 bill, et cetera, et cetera. This all just came flying at me like crazy. Now, the first part of NERP, you know, you say that it kills the banks, And yes, theoretically, a bank should be destroyed by it because they borrow short and they lend long. The problem is banks don't make money from lending anymore because they don't lend. They just
True.
take the Fed's free money and inspect markets with it and create fraudulent accounting and derivatives, et cetera. But the fact is that yes, it's certainly bad, which is why Deutsche Bank itself only about 10 days ago wrote a letter to the ECB and the Bank of Japan saying, stop lowering rates to negative, you're killing us. And then the funny thing was just last week they changed their mind and said, oh no, we need more stimulus, more QE. Meaning they're all over the place. They're so controlled by the banks, they're puppets right now, and they're very scared of what is going on around them. But the thing with the negative interest rates that scares me the most, and why I wrote earlier this week an article that's called NERP versus Gold Part 6, The Horrific End Game of a Cashless Society, is because I just realized this epiphany of what is going on. And the way that I put it is, I've been asked about this cashless society thing for a while, for the past, let's say, year. Andy, what do you think of the cashless society? Is this a danger to everyone? And my initial thought has always been, well, what's the big deal? I mean, we're cashless anyway. I'm not doing anything illegal, and everything I do is pretty much a credit card anyway. But it wasn't until I saw an article on Zero Hedge, which everyone has to Google. It says it's something like something disturbing was found in a Morgan Stanley presentation. I'm not sure if you saw that.
I did see the
And what it
headline.
was, okay, but basically what it was there was an analyst, a high-ranking analyst at Morgan Stanley, high-ranking enough that he went to Davos. He might have been their head strategist, who knows? So he's in Davos, and he comes back, and he has this investor presentation, which I'm sure he sent only to his top clients, the very rich clients. And it says, quote from a high-ranking global policy official, which to me means someone at the Fed, the ECB, the IMF. I mean, how high can you be that you're going to get quoted as a high-ranking global policy-making official? And the quote was, we need to immediately introduce a cashless society so we can take negative interest rates well below 1%. And as soon as I saw that, it all came into my head about what is going on here as the world falls apart and central banks can no longer do anything that works. This is about they are going to commandeer all financial assets. They are going to, I mean, look, the next day they have voted to get rid of the 500 euro note. That's 30% of all the currency. Now they're talking about getting rid of the $100 bill. That's 80% of all US issued currency. Okay, they're going to herd everybody into banks, and then they're going to take their money with negative interest rates. They can call it taxes, fees, whatever they want to do it. But they're going to trap you in what Peter Schiff would call the Roach Motel. You can't get out. To me, this was the clarion call of all clarion calls to get the heck, as if we haven't been saying get out of the system to start with, don't be in banks. Now I'm saying get the heck out this very second. I even bought some Bitcoin. But I mean, that's how scared I am of what's going on. Negative interest rates destroys financial institutions, but more importantly, it destroys society. And we are going Orwellian in 2016. And in the United States, maybe it's Orwellian run by Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders. But either way, whatever happens around the world, we are going from capitalism's long gone. Socialism is going to be long gone soon. It's going to be communism, fascism, and Orwellian control of your lives. I have never been more scared in my life.
And you're only saying this, of course, because you work for a company that sells gold and silver, right?
Hey, I've been saying this stuff. I mean, I've been writing for free back from 2003 on GATA. The fact that I get paid to write at Miles Franklin now is a privilege, but anyone who knows me knows I've been saying this stuff a long, long time. And there's no way that anyone could reproduce the kind of emotion and passion in my voice, certainly, just to try to sell coins.
Dude, I tell you, it cracks me up because it's always the newsletter writers that depend on, promoting this theory that the price of gold is free and fair and that the markets are fair and there's no manipulation. And their newsletters charge $100 a month or $40 a month or something like that. And it's always those guys that claim that you and I are out there trying to sell something. It just cracks me
Yeah, I know. You know
up.
what? You know what's funny? I have found, look, and you have as well. Since you've got into the sector, what I found out about human nature, and certainly in our world, is as much as the dangers are to the financial well-being of people like us listening, coming from the powers that be, coming from the Federal Reserve and J.P. Morgan and the mainstream media, I have found consistently that the biggest enemies of the gold community are those within the gold community who are putting out fear-mongering, who are trying to churn them, who are putting out ridiculous theories that scare people or try to get them to buy a stock one day and sell it the next day, or talk about how if gold falls below this level, it's going to keep falling. And those guys are always wrong, and they're always speaking two-sided. You know, the classic one, newsletter, whether it's gold or someone else's, they'll say, if gold falls below 1150, it's going to really plummet. But if it goes above 1250, it's going to surge. So what happens? It goes below 1150, and they go, see, I told you, it plummeted. Then the next, a few months later, after you've sold everything and you've shorted everything and it goes back to 1300, you go, hey, didn't I tell you when it goes above 1250, it's going to surge? I mean, that's the kind of things these people do. And you know, people like you and me are trying to tell people, we're not here to trade, and certainly not to trade rigged markets. We are here to protect ourselves because we are the ones. You know, I wrote the other day, you know, about Neo in The Matrix. I said, we are Neo at the end of the movie when he finally realizes he's got the power. Not Mr. Smith, he's got the power. He's the one who hold, we're the people who own the gold and silver that is scarce in the world, that they want, and they are desperately trying to get us to not own. And the way they try to get us to not own it is by putting us in paper vehicles that they destroy. We have the power. All we have to do is be smart and hold the physical.
Exactly. And isn't it funny? What is it? Maybe 1% of the U.S., I'll just talk about the U.S., 1% of the U.S. population has even an exposure to paper gold. But yet, there's a daily barrage of articles on Bloomberg or MarketWatch or anything talking about how terrible gold is. Why do they even care when so few people own it? But to your point, gotta get his, we don't want anybody owning it. And I want to stress before we go any further, if you're familiar with Andy and the work he does, and you know how great Miles Franklin is, they are going out of their way to help people here in 2016, and they are sponsoring and putting on free seminars, free meetings all around the country. They did their first one back in January. Andy, didn't you have like 120 people there or something in Denver?
130, actually, and
130.
we have two more well, we have three more upcoming. The first one is in Minneapolis this coming Friday, the 26th, as in next week, and then March 16th in Phoenix we have one, and I'm about to announce April 21st in Fort Lauderdale, although that one may have a nominal charge because the cost of traveling down there, but very nominal. But yes, myself and Andy Shechtman. Andy is the president and co-founder of Miles Franklin. He's been doing this for 27 years. He knows as much about the bullion industry as I know about the bullion markets. And it's a really compelling way to simply ask us questions for 3 or 4 hours. We will answer everything.
There you go. And again, February 26th, Minneapolis, March 16th, Phoenix, and now April 21st in Fort Lauderdale. Look, if you're anywhere near there, one, you simply have to go just so you can finally get a chance to meet Andy. Second, bring a friend for crying out loud. Bring two. I mean, this is extremely helpful that you're doing this, and I'm glad to make sure everyone knows that they're out there. Andy, I want to move on to the questions that have been emailed, and then, of course, right after that, we'll get into the questions that are in queue, and they're already starting to back up, so I better move fast. Remember, these kind of jump around, so I think you'll have fun with these. The first one comes from Lyndon, who points out, I think it's been about maybe 2 weeks ago that I first saw the thing on Twitter about Canada selling 43% of their gold reserves. And I went, holy cow, 43%. And then I figured out that they only had 2 metric tons to begin with. Seriously?
Yeah.
They had sold all their gold reserves back before 2010. So Lyndon wants to know, what the hell is this about? Are they looking to further devalue the loonie and have everyone lose faith in the Canadian dollar? Are they just whistling past the graveyard trying to show the public how unimportant gold is? What do you think about this? What is Canada?
I would say I wouldn't put too much into this because, as you said, they sold that long ago. They literally have almost nothing left. It's you know, so 43% of a very small number is doesn't matter. The
Right.
fact that in this environment where they clearly don't need that kind of money. I mean, it's only a couple of billion dollars. The fact that they're actually selling it is just so arrogant
Yeah.
because clearly, there are other assets they could sell, but to sell the one thing that is going up in value, and I mean, for Canadian governments to not understand the value of gold, considering that they're one of the largest gold producers and mineral producers in the world, is astounding. But again, it just shows you that even in the halls of where the smartest metals people should be, They aren't. And the same goes for Australia. I mean, I have tons and tons of listeners in Australia because it's a commodity-based economy and they understand gold. But they say the same kind of things as they say here and in Europe. Most people are clueless. They couldn't care less. The Australian government, they're completely into the fiat regime. They have no interest in gold. Frankly, the Perth Mint I found to put out some of the most anti-gold propaganda I've ever seen. So again, as I said, the dangers are often from the places that you would think would be your biggest enemies. And while the government of Canada is no danger, they certainly are showing that in a place where you should have smart gold people, you have just as big morons as in the halls of in the leadership of fiat currency, such as here.
They're all linked together. They're all in the same little lifeboat, all chained together, you know. So what are they going to do? They're all going to bail water as fast as they can. It doesn't
Yeah, my
matter.
favorite, by the way, my favorite is the Reserve Bank of India. You know, in fact, I wrote an article a while ago, I mean, several years ago, called "The World's Worst Government," and everyone's going, "Well, who is that? Is it the U.S.?" And I go, "No, it's India," because India, to me, is the equivalent of financial apartheid. You know, you had in South Africa like a tiny, tiny amount of black people running a country of white people and doing it ruthlessly so. And what do you think happened? And the same, by the way, goes for what's going on in Saudi Arabia. About a tiny handful of people who lead the country and they're friends with the U.S. and Westerners, and the rest of the country hates Westerners. What do you think is going to happen there? And then the third one on that plane is India, which is the most egregious because India, more than any country on the planet, even more than China, respects the value of gold and silver as money. If you ask any Indian, how much are you worth? They are not going to say rupees. They are going to say their value in precious metals and other real items of value. And the fact that of all the countries on earth to develop a total Western puppet government and reserve bank and central bank that cares about nothing except paper money is beyond me. You know, they create these tariffs, a big black market comes around. They say that we need to get the trade deficit down. The trade deficit explodes and the rupee hits an all-time low. I mean, they're going to have a revolution over there because of their suppression of the natural forces of monetary of money, gold and silver.
Well said, my friend. I remember when they first announced that scheme to monetize, you know, steal the gold and monetize it and give you a piece of paper back and a promise of 1% tax-free interest or whatever it was. I remember I asked Andrew McGuire about that, and he just laughed and he said, "Oh, the Indian people are far too smart to fall for that." And what did they collect? Like a couple of kilograms or something in the first few months? It was
Yeah.
something.
Oh, and actually, it's now up to 2% the interest rate, but you have to give them your gold for like 7 or 8 years because which you'll never see again. And you know, and again, the whole thing backfired, as you said. It's no different than the Bank of Japan lowering their interest rates and then to get the yen to go down, and instead it goes up because all they did was show that they're a naked emperor by doing that. They did the scheme. The people exposed them right away by not falling for it, and the rupee has plunged to a new all-time low since, and gold demand has exploded, let alone with the black market. In fact, people don't even care about the black market anymore. They'll pay those premiums. So, you know, I think that the Indian regime may be one of the first surprises to go in the coming years.
Interesting thought. All right, next question. This takes us back a couple of weeks to that very odd occurrence of the London silver fix. I believe it was January 28th or 9th or something like that, when we're cruising along at 1440 for silver, about a dollar lower than we are now. And magically, the silver fix gets set at $13.58, thereby really putting the squeegee to anybody that was looking to sell that day. So, Andy, what do you make of that? Anything significant? You know, the question from Gabe is, does it reflect a critical shortage of physical? Was it, do you think it was done because of expiring derivatives that day? Gabe just wants to know your thoughts on the events of that day.
Right. Well, certainly significant, that's for sure. And I'll if in ma many ways, which we'll talk about. Okay. First of all, for them to do, well, first of all, the fact that they even have a fix in the first place is absolutely beyond me. Why on earth would you need someone to fix a price that's traded in the market? It's not like I mean, it would be like walking into the supermarket and there's price tags everywhere, but they say, no, forget the price tags. We got three people who are going to have a meeting and they're going to tell you what price you have to pay. And then it'll go back to being the price tags for the other 23 hours of the day. I don't understand why there's a need for a fix when you have a highly liquid market. That's the first thing that should warn everyone that there's something wrong. Second of all, the fact that the whole world is starting to get onto this rigging, not just of gold, but of all markets, to do something so unbelievably egregious in plain sight in the world's largest physical precious metal market is awe-inspiring. They obviously didn't care who saw what they were doing, and obviously people had to suspect that something bad was going on behind the scenes. And the number one thing that people think is, well, someone had a derivatives position that they were going to blow. And I guess that's true, but it's not like silver has had this monstrous up or down move in the last month. So to me, it's just, I can't even figure out why they would be dumb enough to do this, because all it does is alert the world, for whatever the reason, that there's manipulation there. But the more important part of why this was such a big event came the very next day. Again, news that was almost not reported at all. I'm lucky to even found it. Even was not on Zero Hedge. I just kind of was scanning around. I saw this little tiny headline. I go, oh, let me read this. And then, bam, after reading this headline, which I'll talk about in a second, I wrote an article maybe a couple of days later that was titled "The Most Important News in Gold Market History." So yes, what happened on the Silver Fix was very important. And the headline I'm referring to, which was the day or two after that London Fix, was six of the what they call Category 5 miners on the LBMA, meaning big mining companies that have their own accounts to hedge their metal trading, metal production, quit. Six, that's 11%. I think there's like 40 or 50 of them. And six quit. Most importantly, Rio Tinto, which is the world's second largest miner, didn't give it a reason. They just all banded together 2 days later and said, we quit. And when I said that, I saw that, I said, my God, the miners are finally starting to fight back. And as you know, miners don't fight back at all. For all the different reasons that we're not going to discuss here, they don't say anything. But if the big miners are going to start to get out of the trading because they know it's fraudulent, and there's no doubt in my mind that's why they left, directly because of what happened in the Silver Fix that day, that means that it's a huge peg that got pulled out, a huge rung that got pulled out of the ladder of the cartels around the world managing prices. And by the way, does that in any way, do you think it's a coincidence that the big gigantic jump in gold of $60 in one day happened just a couple of days later? I don't think so. I think that the gold bull, well, we know the gold bull market and silver started maybe 12 or 18 months ago around the world, but I think that this was one of the defining events that kind of guaranteed that the bull market in US dollars for gold and silver has commenced. We're not going back to 1050. We're done. It's going up right now, and that event was one of the key catalysts, in my view.
Paradigm changer. I agree with you. Now that segues into the final email question, which came from Randy, who just wants to know what you think of some of these new physical and spot exchanges that are popping up. I've been trying to help promote as much as I can by shining the light on the Allocated Bullion Exchange, which tries to connect a dozen different spot markets around the world. And they're trying hard to get miners to participate in it too, to give them some platforms so they can at least do a little bit of forward planning and get outside of the LBMA, get outside the COMEX. So anyway, Randy's question is, I mean, what do you make of some of these exchanges? Something you support? Is it something that Miles Franklin might work with? Have you given any thought to any of these at all?
Yes, actually, I did listen to your podcast with Coughlin the other day from ABX. For a second, I thought it can't be Tom Coughlin from the New York Giants. He just left his job. But no, it was definitely not him. And and you know what? The whole thing with these exchanges, so much of what goes on in trading is opaque these days, including Shanghai, where you have the most physical deliveries of anywhere on the planet, and of course the reporting. You know, the COMEX has its disclaimer that the information we give may not even be true, and the LBMA, which is largely unreported. And then, of course, you have things like the FIX and all these anomalies and the manipulations that are obvious to anyone with two eyes, et cetera, et cetera. The fact is, more and more competition is coming for these guys. These guys already have less and less ammunition because, well, in the COMEX case, they have almost no registered inventory left. And of course, people see them for what they are. They see the manipulation. They're going other places to trade. Clearly, all the buying of physical metals is dominated in the East. So of course, at some point, we're going to wake up in the United States to see what gold did overseas, as opposed to they wake up there to see what it did here. And, you know, is it the also, hey, the Allocated Bullion Exchange came online. Also, within days, gold had its big surge. Coincidence? I don't know. I mean, but ABX and whatever Andrew Maguire is working on over in China, because I know he's been working on things, and any other efforts to circumvent these traditional crime dens in London and New York are going to make it more difficult for a cartel, which in my view is already on its last legs.
Yep. Now that's all part of my mission as well. That's why I try to draw attention to these things, because I want to speed up that process just as much as you do. One last question that kind of comes from email, or actually this was posted to the site, but it's the first question in queue from the listeners, has to do with about, and you touched on it earlier, your opinion of Bitcoin, that you kind of recently, you mentioned you bought some in the face of all this NERP and war on cash stuff. Is that what I don't know if it's changed your mind, if that is that's what affected your opinion of Bitcoin? How has this change come about, Andy?
Well, put it this way, as that question's asked, I have the Bitcoin chart on my screen right now.
Yep.
And to say that I've had a sea change regarding my views of Bitcoin, which includes, by the way, having just taken a nice sized position, this whole negative interest rate slash cashless society thing has completely changed everything that I've thought. Well, I mean, it's enhanced everything I've thought, but it's changed everything I've thought about Bitcoin. Now, when Bitcoin first came out, I gave some views that were, very conflicted. I was ambivalent. There's positives and there's negatives about it. It's definitely not money per se, in that it has no intrinsic value or history. But now that the technology glitches have apparently largely been solved, they're not getting hacked anymore. You can look at it for what it is. It's an asset that can be held outside of the financial system. Unequivocally, it is an asset. Is it have a cost of production like gold and silver? No. But then again, gold and silver's ultimate price, when it's unleashed from the cartel, is going to have nothing to do with its cost of production either. I mean,
Right.
gold may trade at $1 billion an ounce. I just use that as kind of an economic floor, because you can't have production if you don't have an economic price. But ultimately, it's going to be priced on its on an intrinsic value, as either an actual currency for usage or as a storage of value. And when I saw all the currency, the negative interest rates and the cash society, I said to myself, people are going to flood into Bitcoin like nothing else before. Gold and silver, of course, the same thing. I think they're going to go hand in hand. They may have different usages in the coming world, but I'm talking about fear and store of value. I believe that Bitcoin is going to be something that people, as a no-brainer, take a position in.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, and again, it's not that, I mean, it's like any logical person would do. You just assess what's going on, you see, and then you include it in your investment allocation, if anything else, right? Is that the right way to look at it?
Yeah, put it this way, anytime you see an incremental news item regarding capital controls or cashless societies, you're going to see a jump in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
When you saw the first big jump that we saw a few months ago was when China, with their botched, they tried to control the devaluation, which I wrote about incessantly how it was going to fail. Once they started issuing capital controls to prevent people from speculating on the falling yuan, then Bitcoin had a big jump higher. And here, now you see all the talk about cashless society, and what do you know? Bitcoin had a big jump higher. And you're going to see it with every incremental event that has to do with people fearing government taking assets from the banking system and from your personal accounts, whether it's IRAs, bank accounts, you name it. I'm telling you, it's going to be a go-to investment just like physical gold and silver. And the fact that the beauty of it is that unlike paper, well, in gold and silver's case, they're just going to blow away the futures exchange. There won't be futures exchange. It'll become cash and carry. Of course, with Bitcoin, there is no futures exchange to start with. You can't short it. So in both cases, they're going to be equally scarce.
Right. Andy, you're being, again, so generous with your time, and I really appreciate it. So I better really dive into these questions in queue, because we've already got about six or seven of them piled up. And if anyone wants to add to the pile, again, click the questions tab in your GoToWebinar control panel and type one in. So let's just dive right in. This one comes from Joe, who recognizes I've been speaking a lot and writing about this week the HFT algos that dominate really all paper markets. It's ridiculous. I mean, you can watch how the dollar yen and the crude oil market seem to dictate what the computers do with the ES futures on a daily basis. And you can clearly see it, and we've seen it now for years, how the dollar yen influences the gold price, the paper gold price as well. So Joe just wants to know what your thoughts are about that, about the central banks using HFTs, linking gold and yen together as a way to kind of manage the price.
Yeah, well, look, I saw your article the other day. In fact, someone emailed me yesterday and said, what do you think of his article? And I didn't know what we were talking about until I was on Gold Seek, and oh, there it was. So I read it at the gym last night. And yeah, I mean, people have asked me for a while about, it's not so much about should the yen have any connection. It's always in the press. It's always like, and Zero Hedge is almost mocking it, like, the stocks went up because the yen went down, and people go, well, that must mean there's a connection. And the answer is, no, there's no connection. Who freaking cares if the yen goes down against the dollar? There's absolutely no fundamental connection between the yen dollar price and between the yen dollar price and the stock market. Nor, for that matter, is there any logical connection between the dollar index and the gold price. There hasn't been a real correlation between gold and the dollar index for 15 years, and there shouldn't be. Who cares what the exchange rate is with the dollar and the euro? You know, I wrote an article maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I wrote, if a nuclear bomb destroyed Paris, you know, that was the title, dot, dot, dot. Because, yeah, if a nuclear bomb destroyed Paris, the euro would plunge to zero and the dollar index would soar. Would that mean gold would go down? No. There's absolutely nothing about the yen that has anything to do with anything. They'll write in the media, well, it's the unwinding of the carry trade or this and that. The carry trade is kind of this mythical, ambiguous thing. Yes, people have borrowed yen, but they've also borrowed other weak currencies. And the fact that they're repaying them because they're covering shorts has nothing to do with the stock market, nor does it have to do with the gold market. It has entirely to do, as you say, with HFT programs. They just create programs that become self-perpetuating prophecies. People say to themselves, well, the yen is going down, so it's time to buy stocks and sell gold. And so what do the people who create the algos, who are basically, you know, the bullion banks and their partners in central banks, they create algos that constantly make the yen go down. It makes all the sense in the world. I mean, they're doing Abenomics. The fact is, though, that as I wrote earlier this year, the Japanese, the Bank of Japan, can no longer get the yen down. It's they're trying to, and they can't even do it anymore. No one could get the yen. No one could get anything down against the dollar anymore significantly. The emerging market currencies can, because they're all worthless. But the yen, the pound, the euro, they have a lot of trouble getting down against the dollar because the dollar is so overvalued. So to answer your question, HFT algorithms are, yes, they manage the market, but fortunately, they can't create physical gold and silver, which is why you stay out of their paper way and in fr and with the physical stuff.
And just wait for the day when that all blows up. Next question comes from Mike, and this was actually alluded to in Lyndon's emailed question. What do you think of gold confiscation, especially in the,
Yes.
you know, in this war on cash type environment?
Right. Okay. Well, put it this way. I wrote an article in April 2012, you can Google it, called Priceless Precious Metals or versus Worthless Dollars. And basically that is my answer to all, as I say, what if questions. What if they confiscate it? What if they windfall tax it? What if they ban it? And I, you know, and basically what I'm saying is, these things don't happen in a vacuum. They're not going to come out tomorrow and say we're confiscating gold. The only way, I mean, the only way they'd even dream of this stuff, just like in, remember in 2000, late 2008, early 2009, they were debating in conference, in Congress, confiscating IRAs. You know, the market went up, then they forgot about it. And, you know, we have the next crisis now. I guarantee you they'll do it again, and they'll probably do it with the MIRA program. The same thing with gold. When currencies collapse, when the dollar is falling apart and society is in, the markets are crashing and everything, then they'll get together and say, well, we got to get the gold. How are we going to do that? Let's confiscate it. So at that point, trust me, you will be thrilled to be holding priceless precious metals and worry about that and cross that bridge when you get there than to be broke holding dollars. Because anything could happen and probably will. But by, you know, at that point in society, first of all, you make a decree like that. Whatever's left of the value of your currency is nothing. It goes to zero overnight, and gold becomes priceless. And of course, people who have it will kill for it. You have to go and get it. And by the way, when they say confiscate gold, you mean like go house to house, see who has like 10 ounces of gold if they could find it? No, if you're going to actually confiscate gold, you go to the Central Fund of Canada, you go to the GLD, you go to the Delaware Depository. Not going to be able to find gold. And people, by the way, would hide it even more. So I'm not worried about decrees. I'm worried about what society would look like if such things were even be considered. You'd have much bigger problems than your gold.
And for anybody listening, I get asked that all the time too. I've always said too. I mean, there it's not like it's the 1930s where they're going to put up a sign in the town and you didn't see it coming. You know, I mean, you'll know that this is happening, and as you said, Andy, by then you'll be glad that you have it because that'll be a sign that it's at the end.
Yeah.
And that's not a
And by
reason
the
to
way,
not buy it.
I hope people realize that in the 1930s, there was no gold actually confiscated. What was happening, remember, back then we were on a gold standard, right? So dollars were backed by gold. They actually said payable in coin, presented to the treasury. And what was going on back then in the early 1930s was we were in this depression, and the government desperately wanted to do public works spending to get things going. So they said before Roosevelt, when Hoover was there, he said, "Can you please sell us your gold at the going rate? Because we need the gold to expand the money supply and help get us out of the depression." And people did it happily. They said, "Sure, you give us dollars that say backed in gold. I can just go get it in the future. No problem." And they did it willingly. So then when Roosevelt came in office, and the first thing he did was said, "Okay, now we're going to confiscate it. You're not even allowed to own it." And as soon as he did say after that, they revalued it twice as higher. That's when people realized that they were being screwed. They didn't actually confiscate any gold from people. Most of the people had already given it in, but the ones that had it never had it confiscated. And they never, and from that day on, no one ever trusted the government again, which is why trying to get it from the people these days is going to be much harder. Because they're going to safeguard it a lot better than they ever did, and they're not going to be caught off guard.
And the trolls and the people out there that say, "Well, I'll never buy it because the government will just confiscate it again if they do anyway." That just is lunacy, nonsense.
Okay, so hold worthless dollars and see how you do
Exactly.
as the alternative. Okay.
Exactly. All right, Gary has a two-part question. You're talking about Bitcoin, but what about things like Bitgold as an option? And Gary wants to know that since Miles Franklin now has a storage facility in Vancouver, how about a Q&A up there?
Well, I'm not going to answer anything about Bitgold. That's a separate product. You can talk to them about it. As far as our storage facilities, I think, for most people, you should want to keep it at home. I mean, or someplace where you can control it, where it's safely guarded and only need to know people know about it. That's the best choice. If storage is for you, for whatever reason, you're a renter, an expatriate. You have way too much, or you generally feel unsafe. Those kind of reasons. You're a high-profile owner. Yes, you need to use storage somewhere. And we have all kinds of options everywhere. I mean, we're a gold dealer. We can send it to Hong Kong or Switzerland or London or here in the States. But the only one that I have any interest in, and that's the one I use, is our Brinks facility in Montreal. And actually, in a few weeks, we're going to announce a second Canadian city for our Brinks program because. For one, we charge by the ounce as opposed to as a percentage of bullion value, which is pretty much what everyone else does. Meaning, if the gold price doubles, you're going to pay double the fee. With us, for at least the next, I think it's 2 or 3 years, you pay the same fee. And also,
Nice.
we personally, as in the officers of Miles Franklin, go up and help with the audits. I've gone up there twice. And you can actually go and see your gold or have it delivered to you in Canada. So I think that's the best, certainly for Western Hemisphere people. If you have any questions, give us a call. But again, the best choice is always to just have it and don't let anyone know about it.
Andrew wants to know if he can get a link to sign up for the seminar in Minneapolis next week. Yes, Andrew, we'll put those links on this podcast page. But first and foremost, go to the Miles Franklin site and register for their daily emails. You'll get Andy's updates as they come out. You get Andy Shechtman's updates, and I'm sure on that email list, you'll send out notices of these meetings, right, Andy?
Yeah. I mean, it's free, and I mean, all the stuff is in real time anyway. Whether you get our daily email, it's myself, David Shechtman, our co-founder. That's Andy's dad. He still writes. He's been writing for God, 20 years now. And yeah, as far as the questions, just email me at ahoffman@milesfranklin.com, or I think Craig's going to put the links up to the invitations. And yeah, just contact us, and we'll get you in. It's going to be a real fun event. I mean, these things go 3 or 4 hours, and people ask. It's like this. It's exactly like what's going on this call, except it's for 3 or 4 hours, and it's live in person.
And you got refreshments. at the same time.
Yes, we will have dinner. Yes, it won't be prime rib, but it'll be a nice dinner.
All right, I've got at this point one more question in queue. If anybody has anything else they want to add, please type it in before we move to the final four. This comes from Christopher. Man, this is a good question. We see you mentioned the Perth Mint earlier, and somebody posted last week about how the Perth Mint was sold out of everything. And you see this at mints and online dealers. Every time there's a rush, all of a sudden you get sold out. So Christopher's question is about the nuts and bolts of Miles Franklin's business. How are you guys doing on your inventory, on your precious metals? Any chance of a low inventory level in the next couple of months, or are you restocked and good to go?
Well, it's an interesting dichotomy that we deal with. Now, first of all, again, Miles Franklin is a dealer, right? We don't have an inventory. We're a primary mint dealer, but we primarily work through wholesalers, which is why
Got
we have the best availability and prices around. So no, we don't take financial risks, and we don't have an inventory. So if we say we have inventory, it's because the people that we work with have inventory, which generally means, is the industry being sold out or is it not? Right now, remember, everyone can recall back in the summer of last year, July, August, September, we had a massive silver shortage. I mean, we've had shortages in 2000, the biggest one, of course, was 2008, where we ran out of gold and silver. But we had massive silver shortages in 11, 13, and this one in the summer of last year was pretty scary because there was no crisis going on at the time. There was no gigantic thing going
Yeah.
on, some big price. I mean, yes, we had that $50 gold hit. Right after China announced that they had less gold than everyone thought they did. But
Yeah,
really,
right.
the fact that we had a big shortage at a time where there was no real crisis going on shows you how close we are. And right now, as we start this year, we've had a brisk business, but premiums have stayed relatively tame. They're starting to creep a little, but not much. Business is good, but it's not spectacular. But with what's going on now, I can tell you one thing. The amount of I've never been busier. I've never had more phone calls ever in all my years at Miles Franklin combined. More emails, more interest, and more fear from the people that are calling me. So as far as I'm concerned, and I believe that this crisis going on, we just had this dead cat bounce in the markets and everything. I think it's going through the year. I would be shocked if we don't have a high level shortage of silver this year, and maybe even a shortage of gold if things get bad enough.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there, and I would echo that. I've never been busier either. It is, and we're just getting started. And I do have one last question that came in under the bell, and this is from Ted. It said, Andy, you mentioned Deutsche Bank and the huge potential of a financial meltdown by the banks. Did you have a big short play other than physical gold and silver to capitalize on a bank meltdown?
No, physical gold and silver are my big short play.
There you
I have
go.
not owned I have not owned a stock other than I owned gold miners until 2011. I haven't owned one since, and I haven't owned a non-gold stock since the year 2000. I don't touch any financial instruments, and never will again because they're all rigged. Owning physical gold and silver is the biggest short in the history of the planet, bigger than the big short, I can assure you.
No, I agree with you.
Good
I agree with you.
movie. Good movie, by the way.
And an excellent book. All right, my friend, I want to thank you for your time, but before we go, I've got to wrap up with the final four. Remember, this is just four quickies just for people to kind of, get to know you a little bit better, have a little fun, right? So, if you're ready, can I hit you with them?
Yep.
I think as most folks know, you live in Colorado, correct? The great mountain, Rocky Mountain State.
Yep.
Okay, so is Peyton Manning going to retire?
Yes.
Fair enough. I hope
And
so.
if he doesn't, the Broncos will not have him back. They don't need his $19 million salary. Okay.
All right. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, death by natural causes or possible assassination?
Oh God, I'm down in the middle on that. The news that comes out from that is so terrifying and coincidental. I'm just going to take a pass, other than to say that very suspicious.
Fair enough. All right. Do you prefer chicken parmesan or veal parmesan?
Well, I'm a vegetarian, so well, I'm a vegetarian
Eggplant
who eats
parmesan.
chicken.
How about eggplant
I would
parmesan?
choose eggplant, and we do eat chicken, but definitely not veal.
Okay, fair enough. All right, and finally, at the end of the day, who will be the Democrat nominee for president this fall?
Let's put it this way, not Hillary Clinton. That's my answer.
Yeah. Yeah, I suspect that's going to be the case as well. And we'll just have to see which direction that party heads. All right. Once again, I want to remind everybody, please visit milesfranklin.com for any of your precious metal purchase or storage needs. They're an affiliate, or we are an affiliate of theirs. So visit them through the Turds Precious Metal Store page. So Turds get a little commission, first of all. But I also want to encourage everybody, if you are anywhere near Minneapolis on February 26th, if you're anywhere near Phoenix on March 16th, or anywhere near Fort Lauderdale on April 21st, please check out these seminars. And of course, take a friend or two with you. Andy, I want to thank you for your time. It has been a real pleasure. And I just a great use of everybody's time to listen. Hopefully we can do this again soon, and God knows what the world will look like then.
Yeah. And again, thanks a lot. I mean, I've been listening to your stuff religiously now. So good for what you're doing and good for what the community is doing. And, I even wrote it today. I wrote about how it's amazing how we're all coming together. Even people who I didn't care for, I'm starting to have some respect for. I can see how we're all starting to work together and we're making a difference. And if you bring a friend to a meeting like mine or on this kind of a podcast, you are making a difference because it's going to spread rapidly, and we need to end the oppression. And the world's got to go back to some semblance of sanity.
We're moving that direction. It's going to be interesting to get there, though, that's for sure. Andy, thanks so much for your time, and hopefully we'll visit again soon.
Great. Looking forward to it.
And everybody else, thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your day.